And we're holding on page Sadikay in Baba Basra, the second line from the bottom, near the beginning of Os Kuf Beis. We learned yesterday that Bnos Tzlofcha, the youngest of the five girls, was 40 years old at the time when they came to Moshe, and then shortly after that, when, as the Pasuk says, they ended up marrying their cousins from Shevet Menashe, so that the Nachla stays within their Shevet. So we talked about... So how comes it? I mean, normally a woman first gets married at 40, but Derech HaTeva, she's not going to have kids. So we said, because they were Tzidkonius, then a nest happened for them. And so we said they were able to rely on that Tzidkos of theirs. Their husbands could rely on it. Another point also, which I forgot to mention yesterday, is that precisely the fact that when the Gemara is saying that there was a nest for them like Yocheved, whereas the Gemara is going to go on to say now that Yocheved became, that she looked physically younger, even though she was 130, so in the same way, a nest happened to these girls, the five Bnos Tzlofcha, they look younger than they normally would at 40 or 40 plus years old, and therefore that made it obvious that a nest is going to happen, that they will in fact be able to have children. So let's talk about what happened with Yocheved. The Gemara says, Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, Vayelech Ishmi Beis Levi, Vayikachas Bas Levi. A man went from the family of Levi and married a daughter of Levi. So, why are we calling her a daughter of Levi? Now, here the Pasuk doesn't even mention their names. Later on, we know their names are Amram and Yechevel. So why are they using... So, Efshe Bas Kuflamad Shana Hoysa, how could it be? She's 130 years old. The Karala Bas, and it's calling her a daughter. In other words, it should call her Isha. The Vayele Vayikach Isha Mi Bas Levi. Now, how in turn do we know that she was 130 is the next point that the Gemara is going to say. Now, Marsha says, look, why can't you just say it means exactly that she is a daughter of Levi, which in fact she was. And the reason is because then at least it should mention her by name. Then it should say, Vayikachas Yecheved Bas Levi, or something like that. Here, where it just says it's Bas Levi, then it means, in other words, that she's a daughter, she's like a young woman. But how is that if in fact she was 130? So how do we know Taka? The Amr of Chomer ben Chanina, Zuyecheved, when we talk about that the Pasuk in Parshas Vayigash says that 70 people went down to Mitzrayim, we're going to have it later, and then we're going to have it later on in the Perek, and then really there were only 69. So Zuyecheved, who's the 70th, is Yecheved, Shahirosa Baderach, she was conceived on the way, Vilaidosa Ben Achoymus, and she was born between the walls, meaning as they're coming into Mitzrayim. Actually, we usually understand Ben Achoymus to be like as they're entering, like between cities in those times often had a double wall, so it means like after they went through the first wall and before they went into the second one into the city proper. Rashbam over here explains it actually means Besoch Mitzrayim, in Mitzrayim itself. Rashbam also points out, when we say Hirosa Baderech, it doesn't literally mean necessarily that, because the expression is Hirosa Baderech, therefore the Gemara uses the expression Leidosa Ben Achoymus. Now, Mephoshim point out, it can't actually be that she was, not necessarily was she conceived on the way. The distance from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim is not that long. Fine, they have a large entourage, they have 70 people, they have animals, they have all their possessions and so forth. Still, it doesn't take over 9 months to travel. The Rambam mentions in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, when he talks about how far away would a place be where you have to keep 2 days of Yom Tov, so he mentions, for example, that you could easily get from Yerushalayim to Alexandria, he says, in 8 days. That was in his times. So what do I mean when we say Hirosa Baderach, we mean, in other words, she was conceived back in Eretz Yisrael when they were still living at home, and part of the pregnancy takes place still when they're on the way. So not the conception, but part of the pregnancy. The Leidosa Ben Achoymus, but when she was born as they were coming into Mitzrayim. And we know that in turn because the Pasuk says Asher Yolda Oisa LeLevi B'Mitzrayim. Later on in Parshas Pinchas, when it mentions Moshe and Aaron and their family, it mentions that they were all the children and Miriam, that they were all the children of Yecheved, Asher Yolda Oisa LeLevi B'Mitzrayim, who had been born to Levi in Mitzrayim. Now we know already why do we need to mention that detail that she was born in Mitzrayim? Where else? It means Leidosa B'Mitzrayim, but Leidosa Shalei B'Mitzrayim. Only her birth was in Mitzrayim, but her conception was not in Mitzrayim. Rashbam goes through the whole calculation, which we know already. The Jewish people were in Mitzrayim for 210 years, and since Moshe was 80 years old at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and he's the son of Yocheved, and Yocheved was saying was born as they came into Mitzrayim, so it comes out she was 130 years old when she had Moshe. Marshall refers over here to, there's a famous point about this, that the Evan Ezra brings up a big question about this. The Torah makes such a huge deal of Sarah having given birth at 90 years old. All of a sudden, the Torah completely ignores Yocheved giving birth at 130. So the Evan Ezra wants to say that it can't really be. According to Pshat, it wouldn't necessarily be so, that that she was born at some later point, and therefore that she wasn't necessarily that old. The Ramban gives an answer that Ramban goes by Rishus into it, and in his Pirush on Vayigash, basically his point, and the point that I made by a number of later Mephoshim as well, is the Torah is not out to record every nest that happened. When it was said by a Navi or something like that, or by Malach, then the Torah needs to tell us that it happened. Here, there's no Malach, no Navi that's saying that she's gonna have a child at 130. So therefore, the Torah doesn't bother mentioning the point. The Maharal makes a further point on it, that Bechlal, also the Torah records Nisim only when they're Negea to the foundation of the whole Jewish people, like with the Ovis and Imahos, like with Yisias Mitzrayim, the detail that Yocheved had a child at such an advanced age, and of course that child is Moshe Rabbeinu, but the detail that it happened at 130 itself is not such a thing that's so foundational to the Jewish people that the Torah should have to record it.
She's the mother of Moshe,
but still fine. That she had Moshe is big enough in itself.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, now in Miriam a few years before that. That's also true, right? I mean, Marsha anyway points out as a practical matter, look, given that we're saying that she's the daughter of Levi, then, and you have only 210, and you have only 100, you have 130 years to work with. So look, I mean, like this, if you're going to say that she was born later, then all you're doing is you're pushing it off. You're making that Levi would have had to have her at a more advanced age. Now, fine, okay, there's not less of a ness in that, but still, there comes a point when a man is Bederach HaTeva not fathering children anymore either. Okay, you know, we had a few years ago, it was all over the news that Yid, who had his first, he and his wife had their first son when he was 88. But you know, come on, these things don't happen all the time anyway. So as it is anyway. Let's say Maharsha says if you do the calculation. Let's say, for example, he had her at 90, then anyway, she would have to be 83 when she had Moshe. It's still not that much less of a nest anyhow. So there's not such a big deal to say that she was, in fact, 130. Okay. So now we're back to the question. Now that we established that, so now the question is, Vamai Kori Rabas. So why is the Torah calling her? Bas Levi? Where again, Mela, if it was telling us Poshet that she's the daughter of Levi, okay, but that would be if it said her name by Yitachas Yecheved Bas Levi, then okay. But when it just says without the name, so it means that she's a Bas, that she's a young woman. So Amar of Yehuda bar Zvina or Zvida, exactly that. Melamed Shenodula Simone Nairus, that signs of youth appeared in her, that even though she was 130, she ended up looking much more youthful. Nisaden Habaser. Her skin became soft and smooth, the nifshet to akmatim, and the wrinkles smoothed out, and her beauty came back as it was before, and now she looked much younger, and therefore in token of that, the Torah calls her Bas. Okay. So let's also talk about the next thing in that pasuk. The pasuk says that a man from Levi went by Yikachas Bas Levi. So the question is by Yikach. What do you mean he married her? Which makes it sound like he's marrying her for the first time. By Yaksum in Barulei, it should say that he remarried her, because at that point Aaron and Miriam and Aaron, actually Miriam is older, were already born earlier. So then the Torah should say that he, whatever the equivalent Lashon Torah would be, that he returned her, that he remarried her. So again, Amar of Yehuda bar Zvina or Zvida Melamed Shalosala Ma'aser LeKuchin. From here we see that Amram actually made a whole to do about it, like a regular wedding. Even though usually a second wedding is usually more of a low key affair, but here it wasn't. Her Shiva Ba'apirion, he had her sit in an apirion, which is a canopy, you know, not exactly like a chuppah, but something. It is sort of like a chuppah. It's kind of like a portable chuppah that they would often carry a litter, like they would carry around important people in. But Aaron and Miriam Meshurin Lefaneh, and Aaron and Miriam are singing in front of her. And the Malach Asharis are joining in the Simcha and saying the mother of these children should be happy. So therefore, so that's why it says Vayitach to represent that point that he actually married her as with all the publicity of a regular wedding. Now, why did he do that? So Maharsha points out one reason is because after all, look, you know, Yecheved is Amram's aunt. Because Amram is a son of Kohath, who's a son of Levi. Meanwhile, Yecheved is a daughter of Levi. So she's his aunt. Once the Torah is given, such a marriage is Osir, and it's not even Kiddushin on any Tophis, because it's Chai V'Krisis. So now, Maharsha explains, in order that everybody should know, that you shouldn't think that he married her without Chuba V'Kiddushin. So no, the fact is, it's before Matan Torah, such things are not Osir, Kiddushin are Tophis, and therefore he made a publicity of it in order to demonstrate that. What about Aaron and Miriam dancing in front of them? So Maharsha goes on to say that not everybody knew that she had regained her youthful looks. So Aaron and Miriam knew it. Well, Miriam knew it. She was already old enough. She was already a Nevi'ah on her own. She was the one who had said Nevuah that my mother was going to have the baby that's going to take us out of this gullus. She told her little brother Aaron. So Ema Bonim Smecha, you can be happy with the children that you have now who are dancing in front of you, plus the child that you're yet going to have, where between all of them, you're going to be Zoicha to Kohuna, Levia, and Malchus. Maharsha also says the word Aim itself is short for Aaron and Moshe, as in the two people who are going to be Goyal, the Jewish people from Mitzrayim, and the ones who are dancing right now, Aaron and Miriam. So we're going to be saying in two days we're going to be saying this, and we're going to be saying this in Hallel. So it's good to have another layer of meaning in it. In fact, Maharsha says there's Moshivia Keres Abayis that Aaron brought back his wife who was Akura, who was removed from his house, because we know that the famous Gemara in Sota that he had divorced her because of Paras Gzeira, and Miriam told him your Gzeira is worse than Paras. So now Moshivia Keres Abayis, so now she's Akeres, she was uprooted and removed from the house, and now Moshivi, he had her sit and then be back in the house, and therefore Ema Bonim Smecha, and the result of that is the Tzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim, the next words in Hallel. Other Mephoshim point out another reason why Aaron made it such a publicity of this wedding was also, again, because since when Amram divorced Yecheved, everybody else took an example from him and started divorcing their wives also, and that's why Miriam came and complained to him that your Gzeira is worse than Paro's. Well then, in that case, he has to marry her with publicity again, so everybody else again should take an example from him and remarry their wives and continue. And again, Amram made a big publicity of this wedding, and therefore everybody else followed suit. In any case, the point is, again, that we see that Yecheved had this tremendous nest happen where she became youthful again. So now we're saying the same kind of thing had happened to Bnos Slavchon. And like we talked about yesterday, one point is that, that's one reason why we said they could learn from Yecheved. As Ben Yehoyada pointed out, Yecheved was actually still alive at the time. There's a piyut that said in some kehilas on Simchas Torah talking about Moshe Rabbeinu's Ptira, which after all we learn about in Vezos Habracha, and there's a line in it where Moshe is saying something like Yecheved, my mother, be comforted after I'm gone, implying that she outlived Moshe. So she's already 130 years old when Moshe is born, and now she outlived the 120 years that he lived, and she's still alive now. So at the end of the 40 years in the Midrash, she was still alive, and therefore Bnos Slavchon could use her as an example.
She entered Eretz Yisrael.
So the Pashto said she entered Eretz Yisrael. I mean, look, they entered Eretz Yisrael only 33 days after Moshe passed away. So, yeah. Getting back to Bnos Slavchon, the Gemara asks, Lahalan Menon Akosov Derek Dulosan. Now you have to, when Bnos Slavchon got married, then the Torah lists them in order of their age. Namely, when they first appear in the Psukim, they first appear in the census, and then shortly after, in Parshas Pinchas, and then shortly after that, they come in front of Moshe. And there the order is Machla, Noya, Chogla, Milka, and Tirza. Now, though, at the end of Chumash Bamidbar, at the end of Parshas Maaseh, when it tells about how they married their cousins, and then married within their Shevet, then the Torah lists them in a different order. Machla, Tirza, Chogla, Milka, and Noya. So the second and the fifth, Noya and Tirza, are switched around. So why is that? So Lahalan Menon Akasav Derek Gdulosan. So later on, when the Torah lists how they got married, then it lists them in age order. Now, Rashbam says, how do we know that's age order? He says it's a svara, because we know lo yosachem im kemenu losses at seiru lefnei abechira. Generally speaking, younger siblings don't get married before older ones. When they do, then they have to have whole things over there where they have to ask mechila and so forth. So therefore, we can assume that the girls got married in order of their in order of their age. So then, why in Parshas Pinchas is it listing them in a different order? So when they first appeal, when they stand in front of Moshe, then it must be going in the seder of the chokhmah. So therefore, Noya, even though she's the youngest of the five of them, is the second most chachama of them, only behind her eldest sister Milka, Machla rather. And again, the Svara, Rashbam says, it's not that the Pasuk actually says that, but we have to say that's the Svara. Otherwise, why would it be listing them in a different order? Now the Gemara is going to bring soon a different explanation, but right now this is the explanation that we have there's their age order, but then there's their chokhmah order, which in that case misayale le Rab Ami, that supports what Rab Ami says. Da'amar Rab Ami be yeshiva holach acha chokhmah. When you're talking about in a yeshiva, when you're talking about in a place where Tamar Chachamim are sitting to learn and discuss Torah, holach acha chokhmah, then you go according to the chokhmah and you seat the people in order of their chokhmah. We find that, in fact, among the Talmidim who sat in, or among the Sanhedrin themselves, and in front of the Talmidim, and the Talmidim, the rows of Talmidim who sat before them, where they have the same system, where, for example, the people in the first row were the greater Talmid Chachamim than the ones in the second row, and so forth. So you do that, you seat them according to Chachmah. B'misiba, but when it comes to a party, or, for example, getting married, then you go according to age. So therefore, when they got married, it goes according to age order, but when the Torah is listing them in connection with yeshiva, in connection with their request to Moshe, and Moshe's answer, and then teaching a detail of Torah that wasn't known until then instead it lists them derech chokhmosan. However, Amar Rav Ashi, v'hudim muflig b'chokhmah, v'hudim muflig b'zikna. However, that would only apply only if one of the people is particularly distinguished as far as chokhmah, then you would go according to chokhmah rather than according to age, v'hudim muflig b'zikna, or where one of them is particularly very much older. Then we would give him more covered than the chokham. So in other words, the idea would be, Rashbam explained that in other words, let's say you have one of them is a greater chacham, but one of them is a much greater zakin, is a much more advanced age. Then we would still put the chacham first. Rashbam ends up saying, he discusses over here that in general, other things being equal, what if there are two muflogim? What about if neither of them is particularly muflog? So the Rashbam says that the nira be'enai, he says, it seems to me that in general we would go according to zikna, unless you have one particular person who is particularly muflog b'chachma. The machloikas rishonim among that, other rishonim learn that in that case, if neither of them is particularly muflog, neither of them is particularly distinguished as far as age or as far as chokhmah, then we would follow the rules that would say over here, depending on whether it's in yeshiva or whether it's at a party. And others say we would always go according to chokhmah in that case. So here then we're in other words, Rashbam goes on and says that if we're going to say we would go according to the zaken, because look, even if the younger man is a little more chacham, it's still not a reason to embarrass the zaken. As far as the younger one, he's not going to feel bad about it, because he's going to realize you're honoring the older person because he's older. But again, different Rishonim disagree with that and have different takes on it. So that's one explanation of why Bnei Slavchot are listed in the different orders in the different places. Tanad Rabbi Shmuel, but then we learn in a yeshiva from the Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel a different reason. Bnei Slavchot shkulis, tell you. They were in fact equal. And therefore the Torah sometimes lists them in one order and sometimes in the other order, the same way, for example, it says about Moshe and Aaron. Usually Moshe is mentioned before Aaron, but you have one place where Aaron is mentioned before Moshe to show that they were equal. So the same way over here, it lists them in different orders. And we have a proof for it, Shenema, because the Pasuk is Vatiyena. When the Pasuk says that they got married, the expression in the Pasuk is Vatiyena. They were. The whole part of Vatiyena, Machla Tirza, etc. And it lists the girls, Livnei Dedehen Lenoshim, they became wives to their cousins. But why does it need to say Vatiyena? Livnei de dam l'noshim, etc. Then I need to say the word. So vatiyana means havoya achas the kolon, means there's one havoya, there's one being of all of them, meaning in other words that they're all equal, and they're all equal in their caliber, and therefore the Torah lists them in different orders, in different places, to represent that one. Further on, the Gemara talks about the Gemara starts talking about, in a little bit of detail, the din that existed at that time that women who inherit property are not allowed to marry outside their shevet. Again, you have that whole thing in Parshas Maaseh where the leaders of shevet Menashe come to Yosef, which come to Moshe with a problem about that, and Moshe says, sure enough, Zad Dava Shetziva Hashem, that they can only marry within their shevet. So now the Gemara is going to talk about the point at which that was canceled and the Shevatim are allowed to freely intermarry. Tanan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Tainis. Amr of Shimon Gamliel, Loi Hoyu, Yom Tovim, Li Yisrael, Kachamisha Asabi Ba'avach Yom Kippurim. There were no greater Yom Tovim for the Jewish people than the 15th of Av and Yom Kippur. Shebehen Bnos Yisrael or Yerushalayim Yotzes Beklei Lavan Shulim. The Jewish girls, Bnos Yisrael would be the Jewish girls. Bnos Yerushalayim would be specifically the girls of Yerushalayim, the unmarried ones either way. Would go out Beklei Lavan Shulim wearing borrowed white clothes. So they would wear white and then, in token, in other words, the Ritva brings over here that means that they're free of the Yetzer Hara. They're clean of Averus, and white always represents that kind of cleanliness and purity. This is, in fact, why we have a minhag to wear white, and we wear a kittel on Yom Kippur, is because to represent that tara that we aspire to and that hopefully we've achieved on Yom Kippur.
That means that in those times, only the girls wore with white and not the men.
No, we're saying over here they would wear this white and they would go out and dance and there was a time for shidduchim. Doesn't mean necessarily the men weren't also wearing white, but we're not mentioning that because they weren't going and dancing. We're focusing right now on the girls. The Ritzva, by the way, points out that when you say lehoi yom tovim liyisrael as these 2 days, what about simchas beis sheva? Don't we always say that whoever didn't see simchas beis sheva leros simcha miyamav? So the Ritzva says, because that means, in other words, that was in the Bais Mikdash, and only the great Chachamim and the great Kohenim and Leviim were dancing and performing and whatever. So therefore, it wasn't everybody else was just watching. When you want to have a time, there's a tremendous simcha where the regular people are participating. So they would wear white clothing and they would borrow. It says right over here. Shalei levayish es mishaima, in order not to embarrass anybody who doesn't have. So therefore they'd borrow from each other. So even the Gemara mentions over there, even the girls from very high ranking and rich and noble families would borrow from other girls. And the Mishnah goes on to mention they had to tovel all the dresses in case somebody was tameh, etc. Anyway, so and then they would go dance in the vineyards, and then the Gemara mentioned over there how they would sing various things to attract shidduchim. The beautiful ones would draw attention to their beauty. The ones who had yichus would draw attention to their yichus, and the ones who have neither of the above would draw attention to. Look, the important thing is that a girl is yiras shemayim. So now, the Gemara says, Bishlemi Yom Kippurim. I understand why Yom Kippur was such a happy day, and why they would do this. Yom Slicho Mechila, after all, today when the Eivishter forgives and pardons us for our Avedis. And it's the day on which Hashem gave us the second Luchas and forgave us for the Chet Egel. So therefore, we understand why they're celebrating particularly on that day. Elokes Vav Ba'av Ma'i, what's so special about the 15th of Av, that it was that Loi Hoyu Yomim Tovim LeYisrael, there's nothing greater than that. So we have a lot of different answers. Now these various answers are not going to be contradicting each other. That Ashbam points out, each one of these Chachamim who's going to give an answer is just going to say over what he learned from his Rebbe. All of them are true though. So Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, the first one, which is why it's coming in over here, because it's relevant to our topic in the Gemara, Yom Shehutu Shvatim Lavei Zebezeh. It was the day when the Shvatim were allowed to intermarry freely with one another. Again, when you have this rule that how do we know it was in Chamisha Asabav? So the Rashbam says we don't have anything in the Pesukim, but Hochi Havakim Lehu, the Chachamim knew the Kabbalah that they found this heter on Chamisha Asabav. So my Dorush, what did they darshan to realize that it's mutter? Because they realize when Hashem tells this to Moshe, he says, Zeh hadover, this is the matter. Which means, Dover zeh, lo yehei noeg, ela bedor zeh. It means this matter applies only in this generation and not in future, and not in future generations. So in other words, right now, we want to have that we want to have that nachloshen go from one shevet to another. So Rashbam brings two explanations. One explanation is that Rashbam says is that Poshek on that day the last people who had come in from the generation who had came into Eretz Yisrael had passed away. So at that point then the what the Chacham of that time Darshan is Dovah Zeh Lo Yehei Noeg Ela B'Dor Zeh. Once this Dor is gone, from now on people are allowed to freely intermarry.
They saw the full Levono commission.
That's the next thing. That's Mason Midbar. That's the next thing. Okay. Yeah. Rashbam brings over here that Yesh Mephoshim, that it means because Mason Midbar passed away, but that's a mistake because this mitzvah wasn't given to the Dora Midbar. It's going to the generations coming into Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, what it would mean, Rashbam says, in other words, it was the last time, the last people lived until that time, until Chamisha Asabav, and therefore now that they're able to intermarry with the other Shvatim, then it's a day of Simcha. Now, Marsha brings up the point. Wait a minute. I mean, the fact is, isn't it though bad for the shevet that these girls belong to? So now, in the next generation, you're going to have a girl from one shevet who Taka has inherited property, and she's going to marry into another shevet, and you're going to have back the same problem that Shevet Menashe first brought up. Why are we saying it's a day when everybody's celebrating and lohoyu yomim tovim, and aren't Shvatim standing to lose out over here? So Maharsha says, well, this is why we find the Simcha was Dafka for Bnos Yisrael. Why the Bnos Yisrael Dafka going and dancing? Because they're the ones who have the Simcha. There's no limitation on them. Up until now, a man could marry a woman from any shevet he wants, because after all, that's not going to cause Nachla to pass from one shevet to another. The women up until now are having this restriction that if she has a Nachla, she can't marry a man from another shevet. So therefore, the women, particularly the ones who are having the Simcha, and therefore this is what we mean, Lahir Yom Tov from the Yisrael, means particularly the women have what to celebrate. You know, in other words, it comes out, in other words, apparently Marsha, it sounds like Marsha is saying the men, Taka, may not be so happy about it, but the women definitely have what to be happy about. So, more generally, it does mean, in other words, there's no potential rift among the Jewish people. Shvatim are allowed to freely intermarry, and therefore we remain one people. So there is that. With that said, though, even later on, we do find it was somewhat uncommon for a woman to marry outside of her shevet, especially if she had inherited Nachla. So much so that we find by Yiftach HaGiladi, the pasuk says by him in Sefer Shoftim, it says that his mother was Isha Zoyna. And then I think Targum Yonason explains. I think it's Targum Yonason there. I don't remember either the Targum or one of the Mephoshim. I don't remember. Explains it wasn't that she was a Zoyna in the simple sense or anything like that. It means that she acted unusually in marrying a man, from another shevet, and people considered that unusual, and therefore people held it against, and people held it against her son Yiftach.
The Isha Zoyna in Yericho
is another matter. There you have. I mean, look, in the simple sense, she was a Zoyna. With that said, the Targum over there translates actually Punta Kisa, that she was an innkeeper. The Radak says actually it's just a euphemism. Yeah, well, he says it's a euphemism. It means, you know, the same way as an innkeeper freely sells food to everybody, the same way, yeah. But here we're talking about Yiftach HaGiladi. His mother was at Mela Rochel. Okay, she's a Goita, and then she became a Gioris, and all fine. You could say that she was a Zoyna in the simple sense. The Gemara in Zochin explains it as just that. But here, when you have Yiftach, okay, Yiftach wasn't the greatest of all the Shoftim, but first, you know, his mother was a Jewish woman, you know, so there's an explanation that it means that she was an Isha Zoyna in that sense. So that's one explanation. Rabbi Bachana Amar Yechanan, Yom Shahuta Shevet Ben Yamin Lava Bakohol. Another point about Chamisha Asabav, it's another thing having to do with the Shvatim to be able, being able to intermarry freely. It's a day when Shevet Ben Yamin was readmitted and reallowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. So we talked about a while back, there's the story of Pelegish the Giver, Binyamin. So yeah, in Sefer Shoftim, it tells the whole story of Pelegish the Giver and how Shevet Binyamin was almost wiped out, and then the pasuk describes, in the heat of it, the rest of the Shvatim and made a strong shvua that nobody's going to be allowed to have to nobody's going to be allowed to give his daughter in marriage to anybody from Shevet Binyamin. after everything calmed down and then tempers had cooled, they realized we have a problem. There's only 600 men of Shevet Binyamin and no women. What's going to be with them? So they found, though, they found the city of Yavesh Gilad hadn't participated in the Shavua, so they took 400 girls from there, and that's that. That covers 400 of the men. What about the other 200? So then they came up with the scheme that's described over there in Sefer Shoftim, that while the girls are dancing, Takan, Chamisha Sibab, then the Shevet men from Shevet Binyamin will go and grab, each of them will grab a girl, and they'll do kiddushin, and they'll do chuppah for kiddushin, and the whole 9 yards. So, dichtiv, the pasuk says, v'ish yisrael nishba b'mitzvah le'emer, the people of Israel had sworn in mitzvah, saying, ish nimenu lo yitin bita l'binyamin l'isha, no man of us will give his daughter in marriage to anyone from Binyamin. So, my darish, what are they darishin? That they realize that now they can be mevatel that, minenu v'loy mevanenu, the shvur was only on us ourselves, not on our children. So once it comes, so in that generation, actually, the pasuk describes where if the pasuk describes after these 200 men from Shevet Binyamin take these girls, if their fathers or brothers come to complain, then we tell them, look, you're not over on anything because you're not giving them in marriage. These guys grabbed the women themselves. But in any case, then they realized on Chavisha of that from now on, at any rate, when it comes to our children, there'll be no issue, they're not bound by the Shavua, and therefore everybody can freely intermarry. So that's another reason for the Simcha of Chamisha Asaba'av, that we have the Achdus of the Jewish people back together. Rav Dimi bar Yosef, Amar Rav Nachman, Yom Shekolu Wo Mesim Midbar. Another point is it's the day when the Mesim in the Midbar stops passing away. So the Rashbam explains the famous thing that every Tisha B'Av from Medrash Eicha, that every Tisha B'Av they would go and dig graves for themselves and they'd lie in the graves, and every Tisha B'Av morning they'd wake up and about 15 or 16,000 of them had passed away, and this would go year by year. And then in the last year, they went into the graves, and then nothing happened. Nobody died. They woke up the next morning, and everybody's still alive. So maybe we made a mistake on the date. So they continued doing that for a few days after that, until it came Chamisha Asibav, and then they realized the moon is full. It's impossible. We can't be that far out on the date. And then at that point, then they made a simcha that it showed that the Eibishter had finally forgiven them, and that things are going to be good from now on. One of the points, actually, Mephoshim, now a couple of Mephoshim bring up the point. I mean, how could anybody think they would make such a mistake? A mistake of 1 or 2 days, maybe, but how could they possibly have thought they made it, they were 6 days out? So the Shagas Aryeh in his Chedushim on the Sefer Tainis, where again this whole Gemara is also in Tainis, has a long explanation that he explains basically that it's not so much that the mistake on the date, that the fact that they made a mistake on the date and that everybody stopped dying on Chamisha Asbav in and of itself is not such a reason for a great simcha, especially because it wasn't only Tisha B'Av people were dying. They were dying on other days as well. Just more were dying on Tisha B'Av. So he explains basically the real simcha, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, is that Hashem started speaking to Moshe in a close way, again, by Dabar Hashem Eli Lamer, but it goes together. They didn't realize that these two things are tied together, that as long as there are people who are yet going to die in the desert, then Hashem is not going to speak in that way to Moshe. So when Hashem did, then that was the real simcha. Ben Yehoyada on that Gemara also addresses it. He says, look, I mean, obviously, you know, you can't imagine that Moshe and the other great people over there would make such an elementary mistake. It means that basically the Hamoinam were making a mistake and in order that they should get to the great Simcha of Tubav, and Moshe and the Skenim and whatever kind of went along with it because they realized the Eivishter is concealing it from the people for a reason. There's also an explanation from Mephoshim that the vort is this itself, that they're going day after day, the 10th and the 11th and 12th and so forth, and every night sleeping in those graves again, and like they're willing to, that, you know, that's it. If the Eibishter decides that we're going to die, then that's it. We're not going to think that itself was their final kapara, and that itself made that now none of them further have to die. There is, in fact, an explanation that maybe even in fact that according to the calculation, since you have to have 600,000 plus Jews die over a period of 40 years, that's where you get the figure of 15 or 16,000. So there's even an explanation that what it means is the last 15 or 16,000 who should have died that year. The rule was every year when the people turned 60, then they would be the ones who died that year. So those ones who just turned 60 that year, they had special rachmanis on them, and they stayed alive.
Oh.
Yeah? That's it. It is a chiddush, but there is such an explanation. So to Omar Mar, and we learn in the Brisa, actually called him Mason Midbar until the Mason Midbar had finished dying. Lo yehaya dibur in Moshe. Hashem did not speak to Moshe in such a clear way, pale peh. Now if they now Rashbam explains. I mean, when they needed Hashem to when they needed something for Hashem to say, like by the story of Korach, for example, then Hashem would speak, but he would speak through a malach or through the Urim V'Tumim. But not just any time like it was before. Rashbam gives another explanation that even then Hashem, that what it means is when Hashem needed to, then he would speak. But in other words, up until then, it was any time that Moshe wanted, whereas during these 38 years after the Chetam Araglim, until then it wasn't. Then there would only be, if there was something particular that came up, then Hashem would speak to Moshe, but not otherwise. So, as we find in Parshas Devarim, when all the men of war, all the men who were between 20 and 60 from the other Shvatim, had all finished dying from among the people, the next pasuk continues, Hashem spoke to me, meaning to me, Moshe is saying, this is Moshe speaking in Parshas Devarim, to me was the Dibur. In other words, Rashbam points out in that section in Parshas Devarim at that point after the Chet Meraglim, you have over and over again by Yomer Hashem Eli Lamer, by Yomer Hashem Eli Al Totzer As Moyav, etc. So now for the first time you have Vaydaber in that parasha showing that now there's a new thing. Now we do often say that Dibur means more harshly, whereas Omer means more gently. But another way of looking at it is that Omar is more speaking like in generalities, whereas Dibur is more the specifics. So now the Eibishter is speaking to Moshe in a more specific way, in more of a Loshon Shel Chiva. And Rashbam says another reason is partially because of the smichos of the psukim. Why would it have to say at that point? Vaydaber Hashem Eli Lomer is to tell us this point that now there's a new Vaydaber which you hadn't had before. So now you had the dibur derechiba like it was before, and not just when it's needed, but any time. So therefore, that's another reason for the simchan chamisha sabab. There's many sichas where the Rebbe talks about the idea behind it. Is we know that in every month the 15th of that month gives us the full koyach of that month, which is why Pesach and Sukkot, for example, are on the 15th of their respective months. So here there's the idea that after the Yerida of Tisha B'Av, then you have the Aliyah, the Yerida Tzorech Aliyah, which comes out most fully on Chamisha Asa B'Av, and that's why it's a greater Yom Tov because of the great Yerida before it. So here we see clearly that this is all the aftermath of Tisha B'Av, of the Chet Meraglim, and now we have that they're greater Chiba that the Eibishter has more than before. Even.
Interesting. There is a sikha of the Rebbe about Purim that is saying that Tesvav
is usually the full Koyach, but Purim is Yudalad, right?
And it's going up and up and up and up and saying that actually the whole dates from that is getting better and better. Chof Zayin is.
Because there are also places that Rebbe points out, you know, after all, we don't count down from Tesvav. You know, we don't have, for example, the day after Tesvav is back to Yudalit again, for example. You do keep on going more and more within the month, and therefore that represents that each day does have a mila over the previous one. Yeah. Okay, so that's another reason for the special simcha of Chamisha Asabav. Ula says another point. Yom Shabito boy Hoshea ben Ela Pardesios. This is the day that Hoshea ben Ela, who was the last king of Yisrael, canceled the Pardesios, the guards. Shahoshid, Yeravim and Nevat al Adrachim, which 200 odd years earlier, Yeravim and Nevat had set up on the roads for Layalo, the Sura Larego, that Jews from the Aseres HaShvatim should not be Ola Larego, because he set up his original concern, we'll learn in a few months' time, Bez Hashem, in Sanhedrin, that his concern was if they go to Yerushalayim, they're going to see the Chavam sitting in the Azara, and they're going to realize he's the legitimate king, and Yeravam is not, and they're going to abandon Yeravam. So therefore, he set up his Egle Azav, and he also put up roadblocks and guards on the road to prevent people from being Erlul Regal. 200 years about that it lasted, yeah.
Yisrael.
Yeah, this is during the whole Malchus Yisrael. Yeah, the whole Malchus Yisrael lasted from when Yerovam and Nevat and the Aseres HaShvatim broke away until the final Golos of the Aseres HaShvatim was 241 years. Yeah. So now Hoshea became king 18 years before that final Golos. So you're talking again, it was over 200 years. One point before we should make is that actually in Hoshea's times, there were two Egle Azov, one in Basel and one in Dun. Shevet Dun was one of the early ones to be taken into Golos by Sancheiriv and company. So there, and with that went the Egle Azov. So therefore, at that point, so it's partly that Hoshea figured, you know what, we don't even have one of the Egle Azov anymore. We may as well allow people to go to Yerushalayim. So he canceled, he closed down those guard posts, on Chamisha Osabov. Rashbam points out all the other Malchei Yisrael, almost every single one of them, you have the expression Vayasara be'er, or some a variation by different ones, but basically you have every one. It says Vayasara be'ene Hashem, and it says that he went in the Averis of Yerovam and Nevat. Hoshea ben Ela, it says by him that he did follow in the ways of Yerovam. He was a Rosha, Rak loik Malchei Yisrael Ashahoyu lefonim, but not like the Malchei Yisrael who were before him. So in what way is he better? Because he took away these guards. So that was an advantage that now we have a Simchan Chamisha Osabal. Mind you, Marsha points out that the Gemara does tell us in Gittin that on the other hand, this caused a great kitrug on the Aseres HaShvatim. Many of them did not take this opportunity. They finally had the chance to go on Aliyah L'Regel, and many of them did not take the opportunity. Ad Kedekach, you find even the Psukim tell us in Divrei Yomim, Chizkiyahu, who was the king of Yehuda at that time, sent messengers throughout the Aseres HaShvatim, throughout whoever of them are left, telling them, come, you have a chance to come to the Bais Mikdash, come for the first time in 200 years. And many of them, the Pasuk says, were mocking them. We were making fun of them and saying why and laughing at them. Some people, the Pasuk describes, there were some people from the Aseres HaShvatim that nichnu vayavoyu l'Yerushalayim. So in fact, the Gemara tells us in Gittin, this caused a tremendous kitrug on the Aseres HaShvatim, and that's what triggered the Golos finally. So in that case, then why are we happy on Chamisha Asabav? So he says, look, so Marashar just says, v'yesh l'yashin. He says, you could for it, but he doesn't give the details. We can answer and Mephoshim talk about. In other words, there's the idea. Once the guards are gone, then yeah. In other words, it means those who Taka wanted to go on Aliyah L'Regel now have a great schus that they're able to go. The fact that other people didn't take that up, that's a sad thing, but that still doesn't take away from the simcha that at least they have now the opportunity, which until now they didn't. Until now they were being forced by the kings of Yisrael to not be able to go. Okay. So we'll continue. We'll continue tomorrow. That's the shame with more things about Chamisha Asabav. Tomorrow, well, you should also be able to. I mean, Bidikas Chometz is only after Ma'ariv, so. Yeah, so we should still be able to do it in Ma'ariv. Yeah.
Any questions?
What?
Chalom
Ma'ariv, I expect I'll probably, yeah, I don't see why not. I'll be here. I'll be here, so as long as you all are here, then yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay, so Yom Mashiach Ogo'ola. The Pasuk says about Mashiach, the Yerd Mi Yom Ad Yom, he'll rule from sea to sea, or Mi Nahar, and from the river, Ad Afsi Arif to the ends of the earth. So, you know, here you have the anti-Semites and their slogan from the river to the sea, but here we have the positive side of it. From the river to the sea, Mashiach will be ruling over us. So now, the Alfred Eber, I mean, Eber points out in the Sikha, We see from that a person can't just close himself up in his Dalet Amos and ignore the world around him and say, I'm Nias Nafshi Yitzalti, I'm in Eden, I'm in a place of Gilui Elikus. A person has to tackle work with the Nahar and work on transforming and refining the whole world, Ad Afsi Arif, to the ends of the earth. And that tackle brings about the completeness of Mashiach's kingdom, the Yerud Mi Yom Ad Yom Mi Nahar Ad Afsi Arif. Okay. So continuing on details about Bedikas Chometz. So we were learning yesterday that the idea behind Bedikas Chometz and why we have to do it in the first place and why we're supposed to do it only after Tzeis HaKechavim. So now during the time between when a person comes home and the time of Bedikas Chometz, namely until Tzeis HaKechavim, which is approximately a half hour. During that time, a person taka should not be eating or learning even perek echad, even one perek, even something else. What?
When is this?
Between the time when a person comes home, in other words, basically shkia time and seis hakachovim. So you're talking about a period of about a half hour. So a person, Taka, shouldn't be eating or learning. Even one perek in Kundra Sakhra, and the Alta Rebbe points out, it means even something, even a person's regular personal shiurim, even though he can finish it before Tzedek HaKavim, the problem is he may start analyzing it and forget that he has to do the Bedikah and end up learning more, or he may come up with a new chiddush in his learning and wait until after Tzedek HaKavim, and he's not supposed to, he's supposed to be doing Bedikah's Chametz right away. Similarly, during that time, you have various things that you're not supposed to do before Mincha or before Ma'ariv, various things, getting a haircut and taking a bath and a number of other things you're not supposed to do during that half hour either.
We can still have a shear, you're saying.
So we can have a shear is different, because when you have a shear, then when you have a shear, so here the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, when you have a minion and we're going to be davening at Ma'ariv Bizmane, Achat Tzeisik Kachavim, then there's less of an issue with it. Well, the Alter Rebbe talks about later on.
Reminds each other.
Yeah, they'll remind each other basically. Now by the same. What? So if you're going to be leaving before the 14th, if you're going to be going out of town, for example, then you have dinim and later simonim about what you do. Basically, if you're leaving before the 13th, then you don't have a chiyuv to do b'tikas chametz, and if you're leaving on the 13th, then you do. But there's more details and more complication in that. But there are dinim along those lines. Sometimes actually you have the din where even if you leave within 30 days before Pesach, there are cases where you have to do b'tikas. Yeah, there are details within. So if you're doing it more than if you're doing it before Erev Pesach night, then yeah, you don't make a bracha. So now the Alter Rebbe continues that if it happens that a person forgot to do bedikah on the night of the 14th and he's doing it by day, then by the same token he's also to learn or take a bath or do any of these other things before he does bedikah for the same reason, because he may get busy with it and forget about it.
Okay.